Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and we have another fabulous show for you today, focusing a little bit on the college tennis stuff that's going on, the format changes, but more importantly, what tennis has done for our guest, Danielle Lau, and how she's used her tennis experience in authoring a new book. And I'm going to bring her on in just a minute to talk about that experience and what she's learned and what she's now able to share with others. Just to give you a little background on Danielle, she graduated from USC, University of Southern California, go Trojans, that's where my daughter graduated from, and she played on the women's tennis team there from 2009 to 2013. She did actually graduate with a major in communications and a minor in business, and during her time with the Trojans, she led the team to back-to-back Pac-12 team championships, and she was the captain her senior year. She was also a two-time singles All-American, a three-time ITA title holder, and recipient of both the Southwest Region Rookie and Senior of the Year. Right now, she has transitioned from college tennis onto the Pro Tour, and as I mentioned, is the author of a new book entitled The Invaluable Experience that's available on Amazon for your Kindle. So I urge you guys to take a peek, and a link to her book will obviously be up on our page on parentingaces.com, so take a look at that later. But without further ado, I want to welcome Danielle Lau to the show. Danielle, thanks so much for being on.
Hey, Lisa. Thanks so much for having me. This is exciting.
Well, I'm so impressed with all you've accomplished in this short time since graduating. You've gotten this book published, and you're pursuing a professional career. I mean, that's a lot to take on as a 22-year-old, so congratulations to you.
No, thank you. I've just gotten lucky that some, you know, recent events just stumble upon my way, and I just jump on the opportunity, so I'm just really lucky. I know, like, it's tough for life to be this good, so I'm just enjoying it.
Good for you. Well, let me just ask you, what was the prompt behind writing a book? I know you had a blog, and you were pretty conscientious about contributing post to that. So why the jump from blog to book?
Well, for me, I started that book right after my college career. I was starting the blog right after my college career. And it was more like therapeutic. I just wanted to write down all the great things that I thought college tennis, you know, the college experience brought to me. And jumping on the tour, you know, I got lucky at one of the tournaments, and I bumped into a reporter by the name of Rick Limpert, and he's a freelance writer. And he found my blog and told me, hey, listen, you know, I'm a fan, and I'd like to help you out because I think this, you know, all your messages and all your thoughts, they should be heard, and a lot of people need to know that college tennis is such a great thing. And I told him, you know, like, I'm in the middle of, you know, transitioning from, you know, the professional circuit, from college to the professional circuit, so I'm not so sure if I have enough time, but it just turns out during the off season I was thinking about it, and I said, you know, if I feel really as passionate about, you know, what I wrote in the blog, you know, I should share it more publicly. I should, you know, publish it as a book. And so Rick and I got together, and we took the blog post, we polish them a little bit and put them in a significant order and then publish the book. And so it was more because, like, in the back of my mind, I always wanted to do something good for college tennis. I always wanted to promote it because it's been invaluable for me. And so, like, with Rick knocking on my door, it was the perfect opportunity, and I just jumped at it. I just didn't know the opportunity would come so soon.
Well, that's awesome. Rick is also based here in Atlanta. That's where I am, and he and
I have awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had the opportunity to meet a few times. He's a great guy. So you picked
yeah,
a good...
he is. Yeah, I did.
Yeah. So did you always know you wanted to play college tennis? Was that always kind of your goal?
Well, for me, at around 16, 17 years old, I was working with the USTA at Carson, California. And I was playing some professional events, you know, going back and forth, you know, do I want to play college tennis? Do I want to take a year off, play some professional tennis? You know, like almost every kid, you know, growing up, they dream about, you know, holding that Wimbledon trophy or holding that U.S. Open trophy. And, of course, I'm a tennis nerd, and I've always dreamt about that. So, you know, the professional life was something that I thought about, too. But also coming from, you know, an Asian family, it's very important to get my education too. So I wrestled with it a bit, but eventually, like, the influence from my family told me to go to college. And in the beginning, I probably wasn't sure if I made the right decision. I thought maybe I gave up on my dreams going to college instead of pursuing a professional career. But 4 years into it, and like graduating college, I realized it was the best decision of my life, and that's why, like, I felt so strongly about, you know, what I've been writing, because in the beginning, yeah, I was a little skeptical. I wasn't sure if I did the right thing, and but now I'm convinced, beyond convinced, that it was the perfect thing to do, and that at like 16, 17 years old, I wasn't ready to make tennis my only option, and you know, at 16, 17, I didn't know enough about the world or about myself to make that big decision, and I'm glad, you know, I had good guidance from my parents to tell me, you know, give it another 4 years, keep improving, keep growing your game, but at the same time, get an education, something that's completely invaluable, you have in your pocket, and if by 22 years old you think you're ready and you're still passionate about tennis, you know, go for it, go jump on the pro circuit, we'll support you, and that's what happened. So I got really lucky that I made the right choices, even though I wasn't sure.
Right. Well, you grew up in Southern California, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And so talk a little bit about the decision to play for USC, staying close to home. I mean, obviously the coaches there are phenomenal, and it's a great school. I've sent lots of checks there to my own kids' education. Even though I'm a Bruin, I will say, you know, the Trojans
wow.
are – I know. We have that little battle in our house, but it's okay. It's okay. Mm-hmm. We like both schools a lot. But talk about that decision to stay in Southern California for college as opposed to, you know, maybe trying your hand – you know, at a school in a different part of the country. What influenced that decision?
Well, for me, that was actually another complete, like, I don't want to say a fluke, but I got completely lucky with that, too. I was about a couple hours away to commit to North Carolina in my junior year. I was really close to, you know, telling my parents, yep, I'm packing my bags and I'm going to go be a Tar Heel. But Wes Knott just gave me a call last minute and said, hey, I want to watch you play. And I guess he just either fell in love with my personality or, you know, just felt like had some sort of, you know, gut feeling that he, you know, he needed me on the team at USC. And, you know, being a California girl, I love the weather. I love being, you know, near my family. And, like, where I live, there's a lot of Chinese food that I'm, like, really accustomed to, and I knew if I went all the way to North Carolina, it'd be a huge culture shock, and I didn't know if I was ready for that. So, like, Wes kind of knocking on my door last minute was a blessing in disguise, and, oh, boy, I was super stressed about, you know, like, leaving California and going to North Carolina, and, like, with Wes, you know, coming to talk to me last minute, and him and Richard offering me a scholarship last minute, I was just like, holy smokes, I slipped under the rug, but, you know, I got a great opportunity. I've always grown up, you know, knowing about, you know, the UCLA-USC rivalry, and to be offered the scholarship and to be offered, you know, a chance to be a part of that, I couldn't pass that up. And, you know, like how I wasn't ready to jump on the pro tour, I wasn't ready to choose anything over California. So, like, I stayed here close to my family, my coach, and, you know, close to, you know, what I'm comfortable to. And it was the perfect decision, too. I'm not so sure if I was ready to leave California.
Sure, sure. Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have a younger sister. She's a senior in high school right now.
And does she play tennis as well?
No, she doesn't. She plays some golf, actually. But tennis wasn't for her. She said she didn't like running around too much, so she went to the next thing.
Yeah, I think that was probably a smart decision if she doesn't like running.
Yeah, I think at such a young age for her, she'd seen so much tennis, too, because she'd always be the one to tag along to the tournaments and, you know, sit in the back and watch my matches or, like, you know, bring her DVD player along. But she was always subconsciously, like, in tennis. You know, my parents would talk about it, you know, those long drives home after a loss, you know, me and my dad going back and forth about how I lost, why I lost. And I'm pretty sure by the time it was, you know, her chance to make a decision, you know, what sport am I going to play? It was not going to be tennis. And, like, so, you know, good for her for not just, you know, just copying, like, what I did and just actually making a decision what she wanted to do.
Sure. One of the things that jumped out at me in your book was when you were writing about your junior tennis experience and talking about really kind of the drag of junior tournaments and going to the tournaments. I'm wondering, you know, at what point did you say, you know what, I'm just going to hang on and get through this because pro tennis and college tennis are on the other side and this is a necessary step to get there?
Well, for me, at a very young age, yes, like I lost to all those moonballers, all the pushers, because like I didn't require that amount of patience, and like I was walking on like a thin line because I was just like, oh my goodness, like if I can't beat the players now, you know, how am I supposed to be any good when I'm older? And you know, I don't think there was ever a time when I was like, okay, I'm just going to decide on, you know, I'm just going to hold on and see like what happens in a few years. It was just more like I believed my parents and my coaches blindly, and just when they told me like you're going to be just fine in a few years, I was just like, okay, yeah. I was very naive because I was such a dork. Like I just loved playing tennis, so I wasn't going to give it up anyways. So I was just thinking, like, okay, I'll just believe whatever they say, and hopefully they're right. And sure enough, at around 16 years old, I played that life-changing match in Arizona, and I was just like, holy smokes, I really didn't fall that far behind. And it got me excited for what was in front of me, and I was thinking, like, you know, if I can compete with that one girl that I thought the whole world of, you know, my best tennis must still be in front of me, and which got me excited. It got me excited for, you know, whether I was going to play professional tennis or college tennis. And, you know, that moment just made me realize sometimes it just takes, you know, one match. It takes one more match or, like, one more point just for things to kind of click. And, you know, you realize, huh, you know, so this is how things work, or, you know, this is how it should be, or this is how I, you know, this is how I should feel when I'm really comfortable. And, like, you know, you never know. So you just, after that, I knew, like, with any obstacle or with anything I came across, if I was struggling with it, I just had to keep plucking away. And, you know, maybe just, you know, the moment of, like, elation would be just around the corner. So
that's a pretty mature attitude to have, you know, at such a young age. I mean, honestly.
Yeah, I'm not so sure if it was like my parents just feeding me a bunch of, you know, mature thoughts at such a young age and, like, feeding it into my subconscious. But I was naive, so I just believed them, whatever they told me. I didn't try to really fight it. And, you know, my dad especially, he was always very adamant about, like, telling me, you know, that he thought I was really good, even though I wasn't winning. And so in my mind, I thought I was pretty good. I thought I was, like, a decent tennis player that will, you know, that will sprout and that will bloom at the right time. And I did spend a lot of time with my dad. So I guess, like, there's a little form of, like, brainwashing. He never, like, filled my head to think that, you know, or, like, fueled my ego to think I was the best. But he always made me think that I could compete with anybody if things just panned out right, or, like, if I had a little luck on my side. So, like, it was, like, the perfect combination between, you know, having confidence but being humble at the same time. So I got lucky there that my parents, you know, first generation of an athlete, because I'm the first athlete that comes from my family. Like, you know, I just got lucky that my parents knew how to handle that and knew how to prepare my mind at such a young age.
You are lucky, because a lot of kids aren't blessed with that situation. And as all of us who are parenting junior athletes can tell you, it is one of the most challenging things in the world to watch your child put the work in and not get the results as they're going through those developmental years. And yet, you know, we know intellectually that they've got to put in that time and that work in order to reach the next level. But, it's tough. It's really tough.
Yeah, and it is tough. And in a certain part of my book, I talked about how I was coaching a couple of younger kids. I'm coaching, like, a 9-year-old and a 15-year-old, and, like, I've been a traveling coach for this 15-year-old for a little bit, and I've been to a few tournaments of my 9-year-old too, and, like, I'm just a coach. I'm not even the parent, but I could feel the stress that they're feeling too, because I was there. And, like, when I try to tell them and say, you know, it's all a process, you know, it takes a few years sometimes for you to get it right, but, like, when you get it right, you'll realize that, like, all your whatever you're stressing about now is completely irrelevant. And I can see that they're looking at me and saying, like, how could you be so, you know, calm about this? If I can't win now, how can I win in a year from now? And, you know, even though I have perspective and even though I've been through it, I understand why they don't want to fully believe me at the time too, because, you know, I know they're putting in the work. I know they really want to win. But for some reason, it's not coming. And I want to tell them that, you know, that success is just around the corner. You just don't know. But, like, I can tell and I understand and I can relate with them why it's so hard for them to believe me. So, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. It's tough. And so as a coach to these younger kids, are you interacting with their parents as well? I'm curious, you know, how that relationship goes.
Yeah, I talk to their parents quite a bit. When I travel with the 15-year-old, I actually travel with her parents too, so her parents are there with me, and sit through the matches with me. So I talk to them about, like, you know, development, or, like, how, you know, what I think can help better her game, and also I share with them, like, my experiences of, like, you know, maybe I was in a position that this girl was in at some point, or, like, whatever she's telling her parents, I can tell them, like, yes, I've had those thoughts before. It's completely normal. So it's just because the parents see me as, like, somewhat of a successful situation of, like, someone going from junior tennis to college tennis and then after college tennis playing professional tennis. Since they see me as a successful story, they just, like, use me as, you know, a solid backboard for advice and to see if they're going in the right direction and if they're doing, you know, similar things to what my parents did, or if they're doing helpful or hurtful things for, you know, their kid's psyche as well. So it's just, like, for me, I think the biggest role I play is the fact that I see the player's perspective as well as the parent's perspective, just because I've been through the whole thing before and I've come out, you know, decently ahead, or, like, I've come out and turned out to be a better tennis player than I probably imagined when I was younger, too. So I guess, in long and short, deemed a successful story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me just take a break real quick and give out our call-in number in case anyone would like to call in and ask Danielle a question. That number is 714-583-6853. Again, it's 714-583-6853. And just a reminder to those of you listening live, at the end of an hour, the show will go into recording podcast mode. So if you are listening and we get cut off at the end of the hour, please check back online and listen to the rest of the show on the podcast at parentingaces.com/radio show. All right, so Danielle, back to you. The title of your book is The Invaluable Experience. And to me, one of the things that jumped out from the title is that you chose to use the word "the" to describe valuable experience, which in my mind means there was something in particular that, you know, really has shaped your life. And so I wonder if you can share with us what it is about either junior tennis or college tennis or a combination that is the invaluable experience that you want to share with the rest of us.
Yeah, wow, that is a loaded question, actually. That's a very good one. Well, to me, it's not a particular moment. It's not, you know, the experience just in college. It's just the whole package in general, the journey. Like, it really is the invaluable experience from transitioning from junior tennis to college tennis. And, like, within that transition, like, in junior tennis, you know that you're a good tennis player. You know you're, like, pretty proficient in all these shots, but from transitioning from junior tennis to college tennis, like in college tennis, you really do find like that player identity, like who you are on the tennis court, and then off the tennis court in college, you find out like who you are as a person, like, you know, without mom and dad like there to tell you like what time to go to bed or, you know, are you home yet, and you're kind of really on your own. You find out a lot about yourself and about like who you are, and so with that transitioning, as long as, you know, forming, you know, lifelong friendships with your teammates and people you meet in college, and also becoming just a better person in general from the stressful competition in college tennis, I think, like, in general, just growing as a person, it is the invaluable experience. You learn a lot about yourself. You become a stronger person for it. And, you know, at the same time, you get that invaluable education that a lot of people are really struggling to get, you know, nowadays. Like, to me, as a whole, it's the invaluable experience. Like, going to college, playing for an excellent university, it packs so many things. You get to travel. You know, you get to meet a lot of people. And I was just advising my younger sister the other day, like, you know, I know you're going to go to a college, and, you know, I just want you to expose yourself to as many people as possible and, like, join as many, you know, clubs as possible, because, like, unlike you, like, I was able to, you know, travel to different cities, travel to different states, and be immersed in, like, different cultures. So it's a loaded experience, and that's why I think college is, you know, it is invaluable. There's so many things to it, you know, as, you know, growing yourself as a person, seeing things in the world, and meeting a lot of people. You know, it, to me, it's something that I don't think anyone should pass up on.
It's interesting. I tweeted earlier today that you would be on the show today, and someone tweeted back that they didn't understand why a tennis player would go to college when they could just get their degree online and jump right to the pro tour. How would you respond to that?
Well, again, it's like what I said, college is so much more than just a degree. You know, speaking from a personal standpoint, like going to college, like I was able to interact with two of the, you know, I think the greatest coaches in the nation. You got Richard Gallien and Wes Knott to help me like grow as a person too, and on the court. And like, although professional tennis, it's a grand scheme. It's like, you know, it's the glitz and the glamours of like holding that trophy, yeah, it's huge in a lot of tennis players' minds. But like to me, what I really do appreciate about college tennis is the pressure that comes with playing for something bigger than yourself. And at 3-all in a duo match, at 5-4, you're up 5-4 or you're down 5-4. It takes a lot of guts to pull that match off. It takes a lot of character and courage, and you got to be brave to be able to handle that kind of pressure. It's a different kind of pressure. So, you know, for me, you know, forming those relationships with your teammates, or, you know, having, you know, the facilities to make yourself a more mature person, a more mature tennis player. You know, college, it gives you so many things that helps grow your game at the time when you need it. And if someone wants to, you know, take online courses and jump on the professional circuit, I think they're missing out on some of the most important things college tennis offers you, which is like the relationships that's going to help you, you know, grow and to be ready for the professional circuit, and also helps round you as a person in general. I mean, what happens if you take that online course and you try the professional circuit and the professional circuit doesn't work out? Well, you just kind of missed out on, you know, the whole team aspect about how, you know, it's important to achieve something with other people in life. And, you know, like all those friends you could have made and, like, those relationships that you could have formed with the staff at your school or, you know, at your university or with your coaches. You know, I think that's something, like, incredibly invaluable. Like, me, myself, I still talk to my teammates. I'm still very close to them. And if there is something that I tell everyone that I miss the most about college tennis, it's my teammates. It's like, seeing Wes Knott and Richard Galyon every day. Like, those, that's what I miss the most about it. And for me, I don't think you can get that, you know, from an online course, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's a great response. And you know, I've seen the interaction that a lot of the coaches continue to have with their former players just through my interaction with them in social media. And I think it's really cool. I mean, I think that relationship between coach and player and between teammates is something that, you know, shouldn't be missed. I mean, there are always those exceptions, those players that really are ready to jump right to the tour at age 18, but I think they're fewer and further between than what we're seeing in reality. And, you know, it makes me sad when kids skip that experience. I think it's a very cool thing to watch, and I applaud you for taking that step and seeing it through and getting your degree, because a lot of players tend to make the transition sooner than their graduation date, and that's okay too for some people.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very difficult to go back to school, and I actually had the opportunity to meet Justin Gimelstob a couple weeks ago, and he was telling me how he's now gone back to school to get his degree from UCLA. He never completed it. He's now a husband, a father, and, you know, works full-time and travels all over the world, but getting that degree was that important to him that he's chosen to go back and complete it. And, you know, it's a lot harder in your 30s than in your 20s.
Yeah, I know what you mean. My dad was just studying for a real estate exam, and he was saying, like, man, I wish I did this when I was younger. Studying's much tougher when you're older. But, you know, for me, like, a degree is something that no one can really take away from you. It's something in your back pocket. It's more than just a diploma and a piece of paper, but it's, you know, it's something that, you know, you set yourself out to do. And it takes 4 years of hard work and commitment to complete it. And, you know, when you graduate, it's something, yes, it's something no one can take away from you. And it is something that you want to, you know, Richard always said, have it in your back pocket. You know, it's maybe you don't use it all the time, but it's always there, and you'll be surprised when you need it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's funny. I've shared this story before, I think, but I was a political science major in college, and had no idea what I was going to do with it, but I really liked one of my professors, so I decided that's what I would major in. And after college, went into banking and financial planning, and, you know, which had nothing to do with political science, and then went into the fitness world, which again had nothing to do with political science. But then I found myself as the head of the Governor's Commission on Physical Fitness and Sports in Georgia. And so all of a sudden that political science degree was coming in handy, and I was in my mid-30s at that point. But, you know, it's like, oh, okay, here's why I did that. You know, so you're right. You never know when you're going to need it, and kudos to you for seeing it through. So I think that's awesome.
Thank you.
Share with us now what it's been like to transition from being a USC Trojan and having your schedule 100% planned for you, your training all planned for you, to now being on the professional tour and having to take care of all those details yourself.
Well, that transition was really tough. And to be honest, like after my last NCAAs, I was in a bind between, you know, do I get a job and do the typical thing every college graduate does, or do I, you know, keep pursuing the dream? And, you know, I was very close to actually picking up, you know, a job opportunity. I had a few, like, interviews with asset management firms, and so it was just, like, it was, like, pressure, like, pulling me, like, left and right. You know, I had invested 15 years of my life in the tennis, but then at the same time, you know, especially with the economy these days, you know, you'd think, you know, I gotta start making money immediately, and I gotta start, you know, thinking about my future, and maybe I could buy a house by the time I'm 30 years old. So it was, you know, there was like pressure pulling me left and right, but, you know, good thing, like, I had the right people tell me, you know what, go play, you're still good enough, and if you're still in love with the game, which I very much was, you know, they told me, go do it. And so transitioning from, you know, college tennis to the professional circuit, I was scared. I was very scared. I was scared if I was good enough. And two, I was, again, like, here's how big relationships are. Like, I was scared of being by myself. You know, like I told you, I miss, like, seeing Wes Knott and Richard Galliott and all my teammates the most. And, like, I was scared of, like, going out there and trying to win and trying to conquer the world, you know, on my own without, like, you know, my teammates, you know, to support me or to back me up or to, like, tell me no sweat after a really bad day. So I was scared, but I told myself I couldn't let fear, you know, be the only factor that, you know, that got in my way of, you know, pursuing that dream that I've always thought about, like, ever since I started playing tennis. So, like, jumping on the circuit, like, the first go-around of, like, making traveling arrangements, I was like, oh, my gosh, this is what it's going to be like. I'm going to try to, like, find the best flight, the most cost-efficient, looking for, like, the best hotel that's not a Motel 6. Or, you know, it was tough, and it was a grind in the beginning. I had to, you know, I was a little sick leaving from my first trip, and, you know, my first tournament was in Macon, Georgia, and in the beginning, it was a little rough. Like, I felt like I was by myself, and like I said, I was a little under the weather. But then when I got to the actual tournament, and, like, all the people started filing in, I realized there were a couple of college girls that, you know, that I knew, and I was actually well received by all the girls that were playing those tournaments. And since then, like, I've made a few friends and, you know, gotten a little closer to, like, people who I thought were acquaintances before and now have become my friends. And because I was well-received, then I didn't feel so alone. And then, like, obviously I had, like, a pretty, you know, successful few tournaments, like, by my standards. And, you know, winning helps a little bit and everything. It makes things a lot better. So, you know, the transition, it was really tough in the beginning, and I was scared, but I guess, like, I did what I could to prepare myself the best, and, you know, college tennis helped me to be, you know, stay practical and, you know, stay flexible and not to want things to be perfect. And so by doing that and, you know, having those in mind, now I'm having a blast. Now I can't wait to go find that next tournament. And so, like, in the beginning, the transition, it's scary, but it's, you know, it's not as scary as I thought it would be. It's not as tough as I thought it would be. It was just the beginning that scared me because it was kind of unknown. But now that I know what I'm dealing with and I've made a couple friends, you know, it's great now.
that's good to hear. I love hearing that. I really do.
Yeah.
And it's funny, every young professional player that I've talked to, and I haven't talked to that many, but the ones that I've spoken to all say the same thing. You have to love the game in order to put yourself out there, and you use that word too. You know, I still love tennis and I wanted to be part of it. Did that love always exist with you, or were there periods of time where you fell out of love with the game and had to kind of push yourself to get over those humps?
Well, at around like 14, 15 years old, I remember I had this like lasting injury in my foot, which was, it was a bad tendonitis, and, you know, struggling with the injury and like also with my, you know, erratic results, that kind of, you know, bumped me back and forth with, you know, do I still want to do this, or like, you know, do I still really love the game? And, you know, after taking like a 6-month break from tennis because my foot had gotten quite hurt and quite bad, I realized like how big a part it played in my life. And, you know, obviously you don't realize how much you love something until it's gone. And so after that, like I just kept loving it more and more every year. And I know there are a lot of stories like after college tennis where people, they're ready to hang up their rackets. But I got really lucky. Richard and Wes helped me to, you know, really enjoy and like love my tennis more as time went on. And like right now I just like fall more and more in love with it, like every single month, every single day. And like right now it's all I can think about is like chasing a fuzzball. And and to me it is like, at the end of my book I say, like, you know, other than like the relationships and like all that I've learned in college, like the fact that I love my tennis more and more as my career has gone on, that's incredibly invaluable to me as well, because, like, you know, of how much tennis meant to me. And it's, you know, it's been like that one thing I can always go back to that I know will always be there. You know, like friends, boyfriends, you know, all these things, they come and go, but like for me it's like there's family and then there's tennis, like the two things that I could always go back to and that will always be there for me. So it's, you know, for me it's, you know, I fall more in love with it now. Of course, there comes a time when everyone goes into a little slump where they're like, I don't know if I want to do this as much. But, you know, for me, I always came back to it, and I always, like, came back to, like it more and more, which is, you know, for me, it's great.
That's wonderful to hear. Do you have an end point in mind? Is there something that you know that will make you say it's time to stop and move on to the next phase?
Well, people ask me that quite a bit. They always ask me, like, you know, how long are you going to try this for? And I'd say, you know, I'm going to take it, like, 1 year at a time. And for me, I won't lie to myself. Like at the beginning, like, before I started the professional circuit, I was already pretty, you know, honest with myself, saying, you know, I'm 5'3", like, am I going to be able to compete with these big girls? So, like, I know, like, within myself, I'm not delusional. So, like, I will be honest with myself. And so, like, I'll take it, like, 1 year at a time, and as long as I think my best tennis is still ahead of me and as long as I'm still enjoying what I'm doing, I'll keep pursuing it. But if I see myself in a slump and I'm starting to drop in the rankings, or I'm starting to, like, feel like the whole process is a drag and I'm not looking forward to going out to play anymore, then I know that would be the time to stop, because, like, the worst thing in my mind is ruining my relationship with the sport. You know, I wouldn't want to part with it saying, like, oh, God, thank goodness that part of my life is over. No, like, when I part with tennis, I want to be able to, like, still have fond memories of it. And so, like, I'll do my best to, like, preserve that part and, like, preserve that relationship.
Given your experience with junior tennis, at some point in the future, if, when you have kids, will they play tennis?
I will leave that completely up to them.
you have to either introduce them to it or not.
They'll learn how to play tennis, but in terms of, like, if they're going to pursue, like, competitive aspect of it, I'll leave that completely up to them. I'll see how much they love it, because, like, I know, like, to succeed in this sport, you do have to put in a lot of hours and a lot of time, and you have to be able to endure a lot of, like, you know, setbacks and heartbreaks and, you know, a lot of frustrating times. So, you know, I would never want to wish that upon anyone unless they really enjoy the sport. So, in the future, if my kid really wanted to pursue it, I will back them up completely, and, like, I think it would be an advantage for them because I've been through it. But I'm not going to say, you know, because I have this experience, you're going to have an advantage and you're going to play tennis and that's how you're going to, you know, get on top in the world. So, like, I think, like, the biggest thing for kids right now is for them to fall in love with the sport, because, like, if that love dies out, it won't matter how good they are. They'll hit a wall at some point because they won't want to practice. They won't want to invest emotionally into their matches. So it's, like, for me, it's just about, you know, how much do my, you know, if I have kids, like, my future kids would love to play tennis. So that's the deciding factor.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense, and that I like that attitude. I do. Mm-hmm. I've asked that question of other people who have said, absolutely not. My children will not play tennis. So I like that you're leaving it up to your children, your future children, your future unknown children.
Well, like for me, like, I know, like, the longevity of, like, my career is just because I love tennis so much. And I'm just thinking, like, if I were to remove that love for it, I would probably have quit tennis, like, a few months ago, like, right after college. So, like, you know, to me, the whole junior tennis, you know, college tennis journey, it's a race, but it's not a sprint. So it's a long marathon. It's a long journey. So the most important part is that your kids got the love to play tennis. Like, that's, like, the number one priority. And, like, for me, if my kid doesn't even love it, there's, like, no point in trying to, like, push him to love it, because it's not going to work out. And it'll just probably put strain on our relationship anyways.
For sure. And I think that's the struggle that a lot of us parents have is, you know, kids, I mean, I think it's natural for kids during their junior tennis years to go through those ups and downs like you went through. And as parents, you know, how do we know how much to keep encouraging them to come back to the tennis, or when to say, you know what, you hate this now, it's okay to be done, you know, and that's a real challenge as a parent. So I think it's important that, you know, we let our kids drive that decision to a point, but, you know, it also is depends on how old the child is at the time too, you know, whether they're capable of that type of long-term decision. But that said, let's jump a little bit, because we're down to about our last 15-16 minutes. I really want to talk to you about what's going on with college tennis. Those who listen to the show regularly know I had Mitchell Frank on last week, and Mitchell's been really active in opposing this latest batch of changes that the ITA handed down for the first few weeks of the 2014 season. And what was interesting to me with this latest mandate from ITA is that they've changed on the women's side differently than they changed it on the men's side. And I know you're not in college anymore, but I know you're also still in touch with some of the women that are still there, still playing. And I'm curious, have you heard any feedback from either your teammates or, you know, any of the girls that you're in touch with that are still actively playing college tennis?
Yeah, I have actually, like, I've spoken to my teammates about it, and obviously, like, on Facebook, they would probably blurt about, like, how they do not want these changes. And I think a year ago, we went through this process again, where the ITA wanted to change the format as well. And for me, you know, my perspective is, like, you know, as a tennis player, if I was still going to play college tennis, if I was still in college tennis, I wouldn't want things to be changed. And the reason being is because if I had hopes of being, you know, a professional tennis player, I would want to, like, play the same format that everyone's playing on the tour, just because I'm using college as a stepping stone to be a professional tennis player. But I've also thought of it like, you know, because I've written this book, I'm trying to, you know, promote the whole ticket of college sports and how it's a great experience. I think the format changes in that sense are probably to their advantage, you know, for the publicity of the game. Like, I think the whole reason for changing the format is because they want, you know, more TV time, or like want to possibly, you know, put matches on the tennis channel. And for me, you know, in that way, trying to grow college tennis, like, I think it's a great idea. And if you were to think about it carefully, like, you know, the score may have changed, but the best players will adjust, and I think the best players will still remain on top, because, you know, in a set, like, even if the set was shortened, you know, there's a beginning where, you know, players are just kind of working their way into the match, and then there's the ending of the set, like closing out a set. And, like, good tennis players or, like, you know, very good competitors will sense that, you know, even whether you're playing a set to six or you're playing a set to seven or five, they'll sense that, okay, it's time to close somebody out. And, you know, they'll garner up, you know, all their emotional energy to close the person out, or if they're behind, to, you know, catch up. And so, like, from that perspective, I think, you know, the best tennis players will adjust. Mm-hmm. But from the perspective of the actual tennis players playing, you know, the new format, I can see why it's not favorable, like, for their future endeavors. And, you know, I understand that, because, like, trying to close someone out, you know, at five games versus six games, it's a little different, you know, I suppose. But, you know, maybe it's a little bit more mentally taxing to have that extra game, or that, you know, that extra something to, you know, add it to the match. But for me, it's tough. If I was still playing, I wouldn't want it to be changed. But right now, because, you know, I'm not so involved with it, I'm trying to look at it from a different angle. And, you know, whether it's changed or not, or, like, whether the changes stay or not, I think there are a lot of pluses and minuses to it.
One article I read stated that these new format changes at most would shorten the dual match by 15 minutes. So, you know, it's hard to imagine that 15 minutes is a make or break in terms of television time. And the reality is that nobody's offered up a TV contract yet. So these changes are, you know, they're being put out there in hopes of getting television contracts, but there's nothing concrete there. You know, so from my perspective as a fan, I don't want the game messed with. And as a tennis parent, I want my child to go to college and play pure tennis. And to me, pure tennis is playing two out of three sets. You know, you play to six, you play a tiebreaker at six all. I mean, you know, it makes me sad, but it'll be interesting. Have you heard from anybody that has said, well, if these format changes stick, I'm just going to bypass college and go straight to the circuit?
No, I haven't heard that quite yet. I'm actually quite new to these format changes, because I've been so removed from, you know, the college world. And, you know, I think you're absolutely right. Like, for me, I'm a tennis fan, too. If they were going to change the professional circuit format, I would probably be talking about it more as well, because, like, to me, like, tennis, it's all about winning by two. It's all about being able to win two sets, not a set and a 10-point tiebreaker. And, you know, it takes a little bit away from the game when you change the format, because, you know, tennis, it really is, like, a different sport. Like, you know, you can't run the clock. And so, you know, I hope, like, you know, from, like, the most pessimistic standpoint, people think, like, okay, like, well, if you could change the format, what are you going to do? You're going to put a time clock now? Or are you going to, you know, so that we could just get on TV? Like, what's that line that you're not willing to cross, or what's that line that you're willing to put down, you know, to just keep tennis the way it is, you know, with, you know, the compromise that it will never, you know, see, you know, television. So,
right.
Yeah, I understand.
A lot of the matches now are starting to be live streamed online. So is television a necessity? I'm not sure. You know, and I think, you know, people talk about tennis as a non-revenue sport and, you know, got to find a way to make it more profitable. I mean, there are only really two, maybe three sports at the collegiate level that are revenue producing. The rest of them are all non-revenue sports. So it just, you know, again, as a fan and as a tennis parent, I hate to see format changes move forward. I'm glad they decided to only do them for the first 6 weeks of the season, and I'm hoping big disaster and everybody hates it and they say, okay, let's go back to the drawing board.
I'm going to guess that things will go back to the way they were, just because, like, you know, tennis players, like, although they may be, you know, even though there are some that are for, you know, the growth of the game, I know, like, they do have, like, some sort of loyalty to the way they've always played the game as well. Yeah. And so, like, to change it, it's, you know, you're cultured in tennis culture. You know, you've grown up playing the normal way. And, you know, even for me, like, at scoring, it kind of, like, makes the hairs in the back of my neck, like shoot up, because, like, you know, at scoring, it's kind of like flipping a coin sometimes. You know, tennis is all about winning by two at some point. You know, you can't win 2 points in a row, you can't win a match. Like, there's no way. And so it's, but yeah, that's part of tennis. And, like, you know, to me, like, these format changes, it's tough to attack from both angles. But, you know, I could see both sides.
Yeah. Well, at USC, you guys have a great fan base, and part of that is due to the athletic culture of the university as a whole, but part of that's also due to the coaches' efforts in terms of recruiting top athletes, making sure there's a top quality, quote, product out there to draw the fans to the matches. And you know, I'm really hoping that the programs that aren't getting the fan base that they need will tap into the knowledge and the experience of coaches like those at SC, like those at Georgia, like those at Stanford, like those at UCLA, North Carolina, Duke. I mean, the schools that are getting the big turnout for the matches, and figure out how to do better, because, you know, if you don't market it, if people don't know what's going on, then they're not going to show up. So,
yeah,
there's a lot that can be done, in my opinion, to get people to the matches, other than shortening them by 15 minutes overall. So, it'll be interesting to see what comes. All right. Well, so tell us what's next for Danielle. You're currently on the pro circuit. You've got this book that you're promoting, I presume, and so what's next?
Well, we're just starting to enter, like, the new year. There are a couple tournaments in January, but I'll be starting to play in February. And so, yeah, I'm just, right now it's the off season. I'm just off season still for me. Some people are already playing, but I'm just training, practicing. I was promoting the book a little bit, and it's amazing because, like, I thought after this book was finished, I would have nothing to write about anymore. I thought it just, like, you know, it sucks me dry of, like, everything I need to write about, but it actually happened the opposite. Like, I have even more things that I've been, like, writing down in my little moleskin, you know, thinking about, like, you know, possibly, like, blogging more or maybe even, like, another book. And so I've just been, like, keeping my thoughts busy. Teaching a little bit on the side for a little side money to support my future professional endeavors. And, yeah, just taking it one day at a time and enjoying, you know, the fact that I've been, like, so fortunate the past, you know, the past few months, past few weeks, and, you know, just enjoying it, because I know there's probably a slump just right around the corner, and, you know, I just got to really soak it all in and just remember, you know, like, there are good days, like, ahead of me if I ever do enter that slump. So right now, just taking it easy, and, you know, like I said, it's a race, but it's not a sprint. I know it'll be a long year, so just slowly ramping up for what's happening in February.
Where are you training right now? Are you still training in the LA area?
Well, I'm from the San Gabriel Valley in LA. I train out of San Marino a little bit. I play with my personal coach there, and I also go back to USC to play practice sets and, like, you know, hit with the girls, my teammates, my former teammates. But right now it's still winter break for them, so no one's at school. So I've just been hanging out in the San Gabriel Valley and just, you know, doing my own thing here.
Given that it's snowing here, and I just got noticed that school was canceled for tomorrow because of the frigid temperatures, there are worse places to be than the San Gabriel Valley in January.
Yeah, it was the high 70s yesterday. I was wearing shorts outside. It's amazing.
Yeah, I kind of hate you right now.
Yeah. I know. I took a little trip down to South Carolina like a month or so ago just to visit a couple friends and for a little vacation. And my friend was telling me, you better bring your snow gear, California, because it's going to be in the low 30s and like high 20s this next week. And when I got there, I was like, ooh, this is a nice change, but I cannot live here. It's pretty bad. It's too cold. I'm really afraid of the cold. And, you know, I'm used to playing like outdoors, like 300 days out of the year too. So it's, you know, if I were to ever go indoor courts, I do love indoor courts. It's good for my like flat game. But you know, I love my vitamin D and my California. And gosh, what a blessing I got to stay here for college.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. All right. Well, so what's your first tournament of 2014? Where can we find you?
I'm going to be most likely in Rancho Santa Fe in California, and then that'll be like the second week of February, and then after that, probably in Surprise, Arizona. Both $25,000 tournaments. I know there's a $100,000 tournament in Midland, Missouri, but I don't think my ranking will be high enough to get into that, so probably most likely will be in Rancho Santa Fe, then Surprise, Arizona. And in March, I'm not too sure what's going on there. I think there's a couple 25s and 50s at the end of March, but there's like a little grace period in between like the February tournaments and the March tournaments.
Well, what's your ranking right now?
I believe it's in, I want to say it's in the 580s.
Okay.
I'm not too sure. I don't track that weekly because I feel like it's just like going to be clutter in my head if I'm looking at the numbers and how many points I've got. But it's around like the high 500s. I think I've been as high as like 578. It's a pretty good number for now.
Oh, it's awesome. Where do you need to be to get into those higher money tournaments?
I have no clue, actually. I should probably do better research on that. I look on the ITF site because usually what happens is like the ITF, they put out a spreadsheet of like who was like the highest ranked person to get into that tournament last year and who was like, what was the last in? And so I should probably look into that to see if, you know, what's the cutoff for the $100,000 tournament. Because when I was joining the tournaments in the fall, you know, where I had made my little run there, I actually had no ranking at all, and I was still getting into the tournaments. And those are like $25,000 and $50,000 tournaments. And so I somehow found my way into those draws, even though I was like probably the 200th alternate. You know, a lot of people pull out. So I should probably look into that now that I have a ranking. This would be like my first tournament. This tournament in February would be the first tournament I'm joining with an actual ranking. So I should probably look into that and see where I stand.
Well, I wish you all the best, and I look forward to following you. I hope your matches are live streamed so we can watch you play. I'll be cheering for you from my laptop. But
thank you.
I've enjoyed speaking with you so much, and really you taking time out of your training and your downtime to share your experiences with us. Because I think as parents, it's really nice to hear from young adults who have recently been there, done that, and you know have that and experience to share. And so thank you so much. And all the best to you. And next time I talk to you, that ranking I know will be even better.
I hope so.
and I'm looking forward to reading your next book, too. So have a great rest of the day and great rest of the week. To my listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the show. And we've got another great one coming up next week. So check us out. And as always, all the information will be at parentingaces.com later. Have a great week, everybody. And thanks, Danielle.
Thank you.